Carl Thomas here from EG. I'm the data reporter, and I'm with Simon Durkin, who is the director of strategy, research, and operations at Seaforth Land. And you were previously at BNP Paribas as head of research.
Correct.
But you've just joined. We have this great little office here in Farringdon with ping pong in the background. And you've produced your first bit of research. The general gist of it is that take-up is looking pretty okay in London, but those aren't the numbers we should be looking at.
Absolutely. Yeah, take-up paints a misleading picture of the current state of the market. And you know, after lengthy discussions with our investors and our clients, we felt that they deserved a more accurate reflection of what was going on in the marketplace. And you know, as a result, we strongly feel that net stock absorption is a far more reliable measure for investors, particularly than take up.
Can you explain what net stock absorption actually is?
Yeah, so net stock absorption is actually the difference in occupied space from one period to the next. So it actually takes into account space vacated by occupiers, and it's not simply the aggregate of space taken in the marketplace. Take up, for example, will always be positive. It can only ever be a positive number, whereas net stock absorption is, as the name implies, it's a net figure that takes account of the space vacated.
Mm-hmm. So one thing you do here is you forecast what you would have expected a net stock absorption to be in 2016 without Brexit and what it actually was. And what do the numbers show there?
We built a very robust financial model here that explains net stock absorption very strongly historically. Net stock absorption, as defined by our model, is explained by change in employment growth, change in stock, and change in employment density. So, you know, the amount of space per employee. We run that model as of 2015 with forecasts for 2016 for those key variables. That gave us a positive net stock absorption figure of 2.4 million square feet. Now, we run that model from 2016, we obviously knew what had actually happened, and net stock absorption was actually negative 3.2 million square feet. So hence, you know, the difference between the positive 2.4 and the negative figure gives us a lost demand to central London. Now, we added onto that number the known figure of minus 800,000 square feet for 2017 to the middle of the year, end of June, and that gives us our 6.2 million square feet figure.
But how much of this impact, how much of this was because of Brexit, do you think?
Clearly there are other things going on in the world. Risk isn't all about Brexit. I think as we talk about occupiers, you know, we feel that there are several things that might happen. You know, firstly, there'll be an element of demand that just simply has been parked to reflect uncertainty, Brexit-related and other event-related uncertainty. And you know, this isn't taking account of the potential political events that might play out in 2018 in the UK. You know, then there's an element of demand that, you know, will simply, as we refer to it, as having wilted on the vine. You know, this is demand that, you know, won't come back. It's demand that will be replaced by increasing density. It will be demand that's been replaced by increasing agile working, smaller real estate footprints, and also demand that's replaced by automation and artificial intelligence, which will inevitably have an impact. And then there's also an element of demand that will be lost to Europe. I think it's almost inevitable. I think it's only a question of the actual quantum. But there will be a portion of demand that will be replaced by demand for space in other markets, be it Frankfurt, be it Paris. I would caveat that by saying that pre the EU referendum, banks and financial institutions were already undergoing quite significant restructuring and cost consolidation. So I assume that Brexit actually gives many of these organisations a convenient banner within which to execute some of their plans that were already formulated.
What's your forecast for the coming years?
So our forecast is for 2017 I believe net stock absorption has been mildly positive in this quarter. However, we're forecasting for the whole year for the negative figure to come in at around 600,000 negative for the year. We're then expecting a fairly muted period of stock absorption to reflect very much the uncertainty generated largely by Brexit, but also other events. But we very firmly feel that Brexit uncertainty won't be alleviated by any single event. This suddenly won't be removed as an uncertainty in the market. So hence we feel that this is likely to drag on and be a drag on occupier sentiment for several years before kicking back probably around mid-2018-2019.
Going back to take up, one thing that you mentioned in your research is that one of the problems with take up is that it includes pre-lets.
Yes.
We at EG are about to publish our, actually by the time this goes out, we'll have published our Q3 analysis, and Q3 had quite a few really big deals. You had Deutsche Bank, you had on the tech and media side, you had Spotify, but four out of the five biggest deals were all pre-lets.
Yeah.
So I mean, what exactly is the problem with including pre-lets?
I think accounting for demand where occupation is likely to take effect in 3 years' time isn't necessarily indicative of today's market. And then secondly, these are generally very, very large commitments that are being made. And now the Central London occupier market is driven more by it's the SMEs. They generate a very large proportion of the demand. So simply taking as your measure of demand in a market that of very, very large occupiers taking space several years in the future probably isn't as relevant today as an indicator of the strength of today's market.
Mm-hmm. How robust is the market, taking all this into consideration? Should we be worried?
It does sound very doom and gloom. There is a lot of strength within the London market. London is resilient. London has a way of continually reinventing itself. If you look at forecasts for employment growth over the next 5 years, these are not the same industries that would have appeared as the main drivers of growth 5 or 7 years ago. It's not about growth in the banking sector or the insurance sector. It's about growth in the communications sector, in the technology sector, and in the professional services. London frequently appears number one in the most liquid markets, in the most business-friendly markets, the most globally connected markets. London will continue to be a strong marketplace. And let's not forget that the London market reacts very, very quickly and it adjusts very quickly. And we can just see that by looking at the history of net stock absorption, for example. A negative period is often followed by a very, very strong bounce back.
Mm-hmm. C4 Land deals exclusively with City and City Fringe, right?
Yeah.
What are those markets specifically looking like? Because if listeners are reading our London office analysis, which I keep plugging, one of the major things that we found there was that City Fringe take-up was the lowest this quarter that it's been since the end of 2012.
Yeah.
And, is that worrying in any way?
No, I think there are very good reasons why City Fringe or other fringe markets will perform well in the future. We certainly don't believe that when demand does kick back in the occupational markets, it will be demand for the same space that's been demanded in the past. We very much believe in the creative industries and the types of space that creative industries want to occupy. These aren't your large open plan floor plates. These are very, very different buildings that attract these occupiers, and that's very much our niche. Mm-hmm.
And judging from the office behind us, that's it's definitely a niche to be filled.
Thank you.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Carl.